running the option on first down. Hagan has it. He has room. He's got one man to beat. Now he pitches to Flanagan, and he may take it all the way. Flanagan's in for the touchdown.
McKinley Wright from the logo.
Oh,
got it. Oh, McKinley Wright.
Welcome into the DNVR Buffs podcast presented by Drift Car Sharing. I'm Henry Chisholm, and there is so much to talk about today. And a lot of it's stuff that you guys are going to hear about. I had a chance to talk to Mikhail Onu about what happened to his leg, which is an interesting story. It was nice catching up with Mikhail because obviously I hadn't seen him since the end of the season, but I had a chance to talk with him for 30-40 minutes probably. So we'll definitely dig into that. Talk to Tad Boyle. He actually said today that he made a couple of mistakes in the Oregon State game, which I mean, I think we all agree, we all watch what happened at the end of that Oregon State game and say, yeah, there are things he should have done differently. But you know, sometimes coaches don't admit that to the media. Tad, on the other hand, keeps it 100 all the time, whether he's calling out players, whether he's calling out himself, because that's the only way that that whole thing works. So we're going to dig into that as well. Maybe most importantly, the premiere of The Bachelor was last night, and it was incredible. I actually had to like finish it today because I was doing stuff, and I just like wrapped that up a half hour ago. And we actually have a chat, like six of us at DNVR, to talk about The Bachelor. And I got all of my Bachelor takes out into that chat before this so that you guys wouldn't have to hear them. But oh, just incredible TV. It's incredible TV. If you aren't watching The Bachelor, you've got to be watching The Bachelor. I started like a year ago. Actually, no, only in like May. And I am so hooked. The drama, it's incredible. It's incredible. Definitely tune in. Basically, okay, and if you don't know about The Bachelor, here's the premise. You take one guy, like I think he's like 27-ish probably, and like 30 girls, put him in a mansion, and then he like slowly narrows it down and then gets engaged to one of them. And he like goes on group dates with all of them. He goes on individual dates and that kind of stuff. And he just kind of figures out which one fits him the best. And throughout the way, there's like so much drama. Like the girls will start fighting with each other. The premiere was incredible. Such a good TV show. You guys need to check it out. And then when it's over, they'll pick one of the girls who didn't win and make her the bachelorette. And then it's the whole same thing except like 30 guys and her. And then after that, then there's like Bachelor in Paradise where they take like 20 guys and 20 girls and do some other things as well. And then let them all find love with each other, and then it loops back around to The Bachelor, and it just goes all year, and it is my favorite. And we were without it for a couple of months, and I struggled, honestly. I struggled. As I've said before, my dream is to be The Bachelor. I think that that would be an incredible time. I hope you guys are all watching. I'm going to try not to talk about The Bachelor too much on this podcast, but oh, it's just so good. It's so good. Before we get into sports, though, let me tell you about Drift Car Sharing. Drift Car Sharing is basically Uber. No, that's confusing. It's like Uber Eats, but for your car. And it doesn't, it isn't actually super expensive. So it's kind of the opposite as well. Bad comparison, great service. Essentially, you park your car in their lot at the airport and they rent your car out, and then you get some of the money. So instead of paying for parking, you get money. Even if they don't rent your car out, you still get free parking and a clean car. So a steal. Your car is insured, so you don't have to worry about that. There's no reason not to. Go to drivedrift.com and you can tune in. Or tune in. No, that's what you do to the podcast, not to do that. Whew. Okay. Let's start with some basketball talk. Had a good time watching basketball. Talked to Tad, like I said. Talked to McKinley Wright. Got to talk to Ken. There's always something interesting going on with him. And also talked to Keyshawn Barthelemy. And I'm going to have a story up on him later today. So hopefully you guys can check that out. A whole bunch of different stuff. I think one of my favorite parts of today was talking to Ken, who wasn't all that talkative today, actually. He was a little bit quiet, didn't have too much to say. And I think things might be a little bit tense around the program, as you'd expect after a loss like the loss they had. Not like bad tense, but you nose to the grindstone. You lose to Utah this weekend and all of a sudden you're in big trouble. And so, everybody's kind of pretty serious. They're trying to do their thing. As soon as I started talking about Keyshawn, he started to open up a little bit more. And basically, he said he's really good. He's a really smart basketball player. He's probably pretty close to ready to play. All he needs to do is add about 10 pounds. And Ken said, he was like 150, whatever. He knew the number. And then he said now he's 172 and he's got to get up to about 185 before he's ready to go against these Pac-12 guys. And so after hearing him actually like know the different weights that Keyshawn has been, I went to Keyshawn. I was like, hey, Keyshawn, how much do you weigh? And he was like, this is a weird way for us to meet. He didn't say it. He gave me that look, though, that made it clear that's what he was thinking. We get along great, by the way. He doesn't think I'm weird. Not like the first time I talked to Visca and Nate Landman. That was something else. But yeah, Keyshawn said, I'm about 170. I was like, oh, yeah. Well, Ken said you're like 172. And he was like, oh, yeah, I was 172 a couple days ago, but I just weighed myself this morning. I dropped those 2 pounds. So it's interesting to me that Ken is so tuned in to that, that's what you want from a point guard, somebody who is in total control, has all sorts of different knowledge about everything that's going on. Bunch of other interesting stuff I learned, but just in case some of you guys are not members of DNVR, you don't get to hear that. And I feel really bad, but this is a business, remember. Into what Tad had to say, and there was a bunch of stuff. I think he said that there's a few things that have been kind of frustrating. He said that he's been second guessing some of his decisions late in the game against Oregon State. And again, like that's the kind of stuff that keeps him up thinking, like, should that be different? One of them, one that we've talked about at length, and I think we've also written about on the website, is his decision to not call a timeout when Oregon State began to make that 24-5 run. I can't remember what exactly the score was when Tad finally called a timeout to get things adjusted, but he said today, without being prompted, he was talking about something else and said, I think I made a couple mistakes. Pat Rooney from the Daily Camera asked him, what were those mistakes? And he opened up. And again, good on Pat asking the question. There was a chance he was going to not get an answer to that one. Again, Tad, very open. He doesn't hide things. I really do think that that's one of his strengths as a coach. He's just totally straight up. And because he never hides it with anybody, he gets away with it. nobody feels like they're being ragged on, because that's just how he is. And he'll tell you if things are great. He'll tell you if things aren't working. You know, it's good. Same, very similar to Mel in that regard. Mel might be a little bit more political in the way he approaches the media. And again, I mean, part of that is if you look at the attention the football program gets, it's quite a bit, especially compared to the basketball program. And I don't know that this is playing into anybody's decisions, but if you make your environment open to the media, then you're going to get a lot more attention. And the basketball program needs that more than the football program. So they have the open practices. They have a coach who answers every question extremely honestly. Maybe that's why, maybe it isn't, but it would kind of make sense. Again, speculation. Don't want to put other people's motives on them without knowing for sure, without asking them first. But again, that's something that I really appreciate. And so he was also pretty harsh on himself, saying he should have called that timeout. He said maybe it should have been a possession earlier. And yeah, I think that we would all agree, especially in hindsight. You know, right now, knowing that they lost that basketball game, you could say, yeah, you might as well have just thrown me out there at the two and bring Shane off the bench, and you probably lose by even more, but you already know for sure that the way you did it is a loss. Might as well see if something else tried, because that's the way hindsight works. So, yeah, he agrees there, it sounds like. And again, he said he second-guessed it. He didn't necessarily say, I made the wrong decision. But, you know, that's interesting to see him just own up to that. The second decision that he mentioned that he thinks he may have made a mistake with was the way he defended Trace Tinkle down the stretch. He put Deshaun Schwartz on Trace. Trace played quite a bit better in those last couple minutes after being held to very little for most of the game. And today, Tad said, in hindsight, I shouldn't have done that. And it probably should have been Tyler Bay, who's guarding Deshaun, just because, you know, he's probably your best defender. You know, I think McKinley's probably your best defender, but your best defender who matches up with a 6'8" forward. So yeah, those are kind of the two that he pointed at. I had some other interesting thoughts on various things. Around the Pac-12, there were 8 teams, I believe, who had 1-1 weekends. And I can't remember who asked, but it was kind of framed in a way that was like, you know, does that make this whole thing a little bit better? And what Tad said was, you know, that's good for the teams who are on the road. That's bad for the teams who are at home. He definitely has a very hardline stance that you just have to win all your home games. That's how everything starts. Cannot afford to be losing games in your own building. And I totally agree. And I think that makes sense. You see a lot of, not even just basketball teams, but just sports in general. The good teams don't lose at home. You can't go into their place and beat them. Whether, you know, the Nuggets, basketball-wise, they've been dominant at home the last couple of years, and they've been 500 or so on the road, and that means that they're a top 2 team in the West. You look back at all the great Broncos seasons, and again, it all starts with just not losing games at home. They never lose at Mile High, and they pull enough wins outside to make the playoffs, or if they're good enough to get a bye, whatever. That dominance as a team in sports typically does start at home, and a lot of what Tad had to say today came back to that, and I think that's where a lot of the frustration comes in. You know, things get weird when you're on the road. It doesn't make it okay to lose to Oregon State, a pretty average, I think they're picked 7th in the Pac-12 preseason off the top of my head. No, it's a pretty average Pac-12 basketball team. On the road, if you lose to them, it's disappointing for sure. It's not a game you should lose, but again, weird things happen on the road. To lose to them at home just cannot happen. So he said, you know, it was a good weekend for the road teams. It's a bad weekend for the home teams. He doesn't really take it as much of a consolation, given that
is kind of what happened across the board. Now the message is we cannot lose again at home. Just cannot lose again at home. No matter what. You have to win a couple games. You have to make up for that loss on the road as well. But another home loss, and they're kind of they'd be in tough shape. So Lamar Jackson just turned 23 today. Whoa. Isn't that crazy? I had no idea. SportsCenter's on, by the way. I always keep like a TV on just to make this feel less lonely. I'm 22. I turned 23 in like 3 weeks. Imagine me being the Super Bowl MVP. Weird. I don't know. Imagine me being the Bachelor. Doesn't seem that weird. Okay. That's probably pretty much everything I have about Tad. Should note, McKinley Wright was the Pac-12 Player of the Week. Good for him. I think it's his second time winning. Played very well in both those basketball games. Lots of assists, lots of rebounds, enough points. Quite a few points against Oregon. So shout out to him for that. Definitely a tough award to win in the Pac-12 conference. Is there anything else with basketball I want to get to? I don't think so. Nope. So let's move along. But first I want to tell you about our friends at Breckenridge Brewery. We've been telling you about them for months now, and that's because they really are just your best option for local craft beer. Does that count as a craft beer? I think it does. I don't really understand a lot about beer, except some taste good, some doesn't. And sometimes the beer that tastes good, especially Breckenridge beer, turns out to not be all that expensive either. And that's the range that I'm working within. So yeah, it started in 1990 in Breckenridge. Of course, that's where it got its name. So many good beers, from the Vanilla Porter, Oatmeal Stout, the Avalanche Amber Ale is a favorite for sure, Strawberry Sky. So many great options. You can also check out the Breckenridge event calendar on thednvr.com. A lot of cool stuff there, including tomorrow, Wednesday, we are having a Nuggets watch party. The Nuggets play the Mavericks, and we will all be at the sports column in downtown Denver. So hopefully some of you can come out to that. Typically draw 50 people, sometimes more, depending on the game. I'm not really sure what we're at for this one, but it's going to be a lot of fun. If you RSVP beforehand, you'll be entered to win Nuggets tickets, free shirts from DNVR. You get a free beer no matter what, even if you don't win. As long as you RSVP, you get a free Breckenridge beer. So there's no reason not to go. There's free beer. So hopefully I see some of you there. Again, go to the website. There's more details. Next up, I want to tell you about Bojo's, which is pretty much the best pizza you're going to find in Colorado. It's locally owned, legendary, unbelievably delicious. You have to check out Bojo's. The Colorado Mountain Pie has become a staple for not only natives, but for those who are just passing through and want to know where the best pizza in town is. Bojo's is the only answer. Bojo's dough is made fresh daily and contains locally sourced honey. You heard that right. They infuse their dough with natural sweetener, and it is to die for. There's something for everyone at Bojo's. Large, delicious mountain pies for the entire family, a huge salad bar with fresh veggies galore, Colorado beer on tap, including our personal favorite Breck Brews, and your favorite sports team playing in the background. Bojo's has private party rooms for all your get-togethers, including birthday parties and large business events. They have $4 happy hours in select locations. And, I lost my spot. Oh, they also have gluten-free and plant-based options. Nothing is more important to Bojo's than their community, which is why they are always happy to help you raise money for your fundraising causes. Host your next fundraising event at any of their 5 Front Range locations check out their site today at bojos.com. That's BEAUJOS.com. And tell them that we sent you. My voice is still not here, by the way. Sorry about that. I do want to make one more note before we go on. And that is that for the national championship game next Monday, we'll be doing a live show, which I'm really excited about. We'll be in our studio. We're trying to get the final crew solidified. It'll be me and Andre Simone, the draft guru at DNVR for sure. And there'll be two more spots, likely Justin Michael from the Rams beat and one of the Broncos guys, whether that's Ryan Konigsberg, Andrew Mason, Zach Stevens. We'll get a crew of four of us. And the idea is basically for maybe a half hour, an hour leading up to kickoff, we'll talk you through the big time matchups, the NFL prospects that you need to keep an eye on. Because you know what? You guys are Buffs fans, but as football fans, you guys are probably going to be watching the national championship game. And sometimes, you know, it's going to be fun to watch no matter what. But if you are keying in on a few guys who could be headed to the Broncos or whoever your favorite team is, it's good to know what to watch for. It'll make it more fun if they get picked in April. And then after the game, we're going to come back and recap it. It'll all be live streamed on Periscope, on Twitter. It's going to be a lot of fun. We still have a week to come up with a bunch of our ideas, but it's going to be a blast. Also, tomorrow will be the draft podcast, me and Andre Simone. That will also be live streamed on Periscope. I'd guess that it's going to be around 11, but there's a lot going on in the studios today, so, or tomorrow, so we'll have to see how it goes. Is there anything else, any other notes that I need to get to? I don't think so. That's Wednesday. Thursday and Friday will just be standard Buffs pods. So yeah, I want to talk about Mikael Onu next. Maybe not for a whole segment. We'll kind of see how it goes, but he had some interesting stuff to say. So, Mikael, you'll remember, grad transfer from SMU, and he had a monster start to the season at safety. He was forcing turnovers in virtually every game. He had something like six forced turnovers in the first five games or something like that. Just insane. Interceptions, forced fumbles, all sorts of different stuff. He was just everywhere and also served in kind of a leadership role. He told me the story of his broken leg, which he suffered on the Tuesday leading up to the Utah game, which ended the Buffs season. Non-contact injury, just going through seven on seven drills in practice, and he just felt his leg go. And he had had some shin splints before, and so that might have been like a stress fracture that was starting to form. Eventually that happens, and it actually happened on a play where he picked the ball off in practice. Like, he still completed the interception even though he broke his leg on the play. So he just fell on it weird. Actually traveled to Utah, and he said that it wasn't, I don't know, he said that it wasn't as bad as he thought. It was pretty painful, like trying to get around, and like obviously he's still sitting on the broken leg. He sits in first class though because he's a senior, so that helped. Yeah, it was kind of crazy to me because I didn't even think when I had a chance to talk to him in Utah, like, dude, why are you even here? But he said he wanted to be with his team, wanted to like coach him up, all that kind of stuff. And then the Monday after the game, so this would have been like 6 days after the initial injury, he had the surgery and then has been recovering ever since. Here's the current update, the current situation. Basically, he's just started to jog again. He's making good progress. You know, he's happy with where he is. And he's hoping that he can get back to where he was around pro day. That's kind of the goal. So that he can have a chance to make enough noise to get a shot at the NFL. I think he will get a shot, likely training camp invite. But this really doesn't help because, I mean, as he was explaining it, you know, he wanted to go into the into pro day like a better football player. You know, he wanted a chance to get stronger, get faster, so all of his testing would look a lot better. But he kind of lost the opportunity, and now he's just fighting to get back to where he was. And he now has a metal rod going down his shin bone.
So that's kind of the update on where Mikhail is at this point. But I think probably what pertains best to Buffs fans going forward is what he had to say about the Mel Tucker defense. That's one of the things I was really excited to ask him about, because again, like he's been in three different defensive schemes in college and he's kind of seen it all. And also he doesn't have any reason to be defending this coaching staff anymore. You know, like if he says it's a terrible scheme and they should never run it again, there's no repercussions for him at this point. You know, he's moving on. And so, again, that's kind of why I wanted to dig in. And we talked about a bunch of things, you know, him forcing the turnovers early. And he said a lot of that was really him being too aggressive, trying to make plays, because I mean, that was kind of the only way that the defense was going to get a stop, as if somebody stepped up and made a play. And so that meant that he was going to try to crash down on ball carriers as hard as possible, maybe miss a tackle or two because of it, but get his helmet on the ball and see if he could knock it out. Deep, he'd be trying to jump routes. He'd be trying to play the bounces when the ball is tipped instead of maybe playing more sound coverage. But he said he wasn't the only one doing that. He said that pretty much everybody on the defense was kind of thinking the same thing, where we need to be making plays, otherwise this isn't going to work. And that is the big shift that he says happened partway through the season, kind of heading into those last few weeks when everybody really realized, you know what, if we each just do our job, then everything's going to be just fine. And it worked. We saw it work. I think they gave up, was it 27 combined points to Stanford and Washington before going to Utah to end the season. And things didn't go as well there, but you know, you saw what they're trying to build up in Boulder. And then we dug into the scheme a little bit too, and he said by far this was the most difficult to learn of the three systems he's learned. And he called it, it's an NFL defense, and he's totally right to call it that. It is that complex. There are that many calls. There are that many on-field shifts that have to be made before every play. It's intense, and I think that's something that could be concerning, and I pressed him on it. I said, you know, do you think it's even possible to teach a bunch of college kids how to play an NFL defense? And he said, of course, like, definitely. You see what they're doing at Alabama. You see what they're doing at Ohio State. You see what they're doing all these different places and the success they've had. Georgia, obviously. And Mikhail was very bought in. He thought that this was the way to go. It just takes some time to get everybody adjusted. And there are those lessons along the way. And one of the big lessons was everybody has to be doing their part. Don't worry about jumping into somebody else's zone because you don't think that they're going to be able to lock down whoever's there, because then it leaves something open and all of a sudden you have those busted coverages, the big plays that kept happening early in the season. Also, I mean, just learning the playbook is a huge, huge part of it. And I think that part in particular, like Mikhail said that he struggled with it at points. Again, maybe not as much as some of the younger guys, but he wanted to be somebody who could be teaching the rest of the defense what they're supposed to be doing. He wanted to start all of those conversations. He wanted to be the guy that they could go to. And, you know, he still was that guy, but he didn't feel like he had enough of a grasp still to be great at filling that role. And again, that's something that's going to change. All of a sudden, you have Nate Landman back, and we've seen what Nate can do when he... I don't know what to say was the shift with him. I would love to hear what he had to say too, especially now that there's some distance between the end of the season and today. But he really looked good those last four games, probably, of the season. He looked like somebody who could be competing for a Butkus Award, a guy who could be in, you know, that All-American conversation. Probably a stretch. There are a lot of guys in the country who could say the same things, but we saw what we expected to see out of Nate Landman, which is a guy who's NFL bound, one of the best in the Pac-12 at what he does, and he still was first team All Pac-12 defender. It's just that the weaknesses that he showed were broadcast; they were very obvious. You forget about all of the tackles he makes 2-3 yards down the field, but you remember the splash plays. You remember that he struggled. He didn't get his first tackle for loss until four games into the season, I want to say. He struggled in coverage. Guys were open across the middle. And then late in the season, all of that stuff kind of came together. He's a guy who, in the middle of the defense, is going to be a very important piece in terms of taking another step next year, being able to teach the rest of the guys who need to be taught still what they're supposed to be doing. And you just need a few of those. Everybody has more experience. KJ Trujillo has more experience. Mekhi Blackmon, Chris Miller, those cornerbacks should pretty much know what they're doing at this point, which is incredibly exciting. Safeties, again, you lose Mikhail Onu. You had Aaron Maddox transfer to Southern Illinois, the FCS school. Those were your two opening day starting safeties. You bring back Darian Rakestraw, who I'm a fan of. I like his athleticism. I think he has some potential. I think with him, a lot of it is, like a lot of these guys, understanding your role, understanding what's expected of you on any given play, and then executing that. And with another, you know, he started, what, seven games this season. He should be a step closer to being able to do that game in and game out as a senior next year. The other safety spot, kind of up in the air. You know, Isaiah Lewis is a guy who we could see there. And we haven't seen much out of him recently. You know, Trey Udofia could also be there. But both of those guys have had a year of practice in the scheme now. That's so valuable. It's also why going to a bowl game and getting 3 more weeks of practice could have been very valuable. But you know what? It meant that Colorado's coaching staff had more time on the recruiting trail, and they pulled some big names. Maybe you still get those, and you could get the practice. Maybe not. The way things worked out, the way everything stands now, gotta feel pretty good about it. Again, that's just the overarching theme from what Mikhail had to say, is that it just takes some time to learn. And he saw the progress. And I trust his evaluation more than pretty much anybody at this point, because he was a part of it. He was in the meeting rooms. He's gone through scheme changes at SMU. He's had to learn multiple different schemes. And then he got to come in here and see what was going on and see the differences. And also, you know, there's no reason for him to be biased. He has no skin in the game anymore. I don't know. He had me convinced. And I was, you know, I think I've made most of these points before, but to get somebody to back you up, even when I was really pushing him to say, you know, maybe it is too hard, he doesn't think so. And, you know, across the NFL, you see oftentimes that when you bring in a new defensive coordinator, I think Wade Phillips was like the king of this. The second year in the scheme is when you make a huge jump. The first year, everybody says, oh, wow, defensive head coach really didn't pan out. And then, boom, things turn around. You bring in a new defensive coordinator, you're like, I thought this guy was supposed to be an all-star. Maybe we should move on. Year two, boom, everything starts clicking. Everybody knows their roles from day one. You have teachers on the team now, which is just so valuable. I think that there's a good chance that that's what happens next year, that these last few games are just kind of going to be a launching point. You know, we can talk about the personnel changes. You get worse at safety. You get worse at safety. And I think that that is one piece that maybe we aren't paying enough attention to You know, there's upside there for sure. We don't know who the second guy is. Maybe they move Mark Perry back there. Maybe one of the freshmen gets a chance to play. Losing the veteran presence, it hurts. It's going to hurt. The question, I think, is just how long it hurts, whether it takes all season for them to kind of figure out how to play that pairing back there, or whether you got to move on to 2021 before you see things pan out. Could be early on, you get an athlete, get protect him a little bit. We'll see. We'll see. I do want to point that out, though. I do think you get worse at safety. I also think you get better at cornerback. I think you get better at linebacker. And I think you get a lot better along the defensive line. And we've talked about those things before. But I also think year two in this scheme, better watch out. You know, talking to Matt McChesney a couple weeks ago, former Buff, former Bronco, played 6 years in the NFL, I want to say, 8 years. He says that he thinks this is going to be the best defense in the Pac-12 next year. He says he thinks Nate Landman could be on his way to a butt kiss award. Maybe a little bit hyperbolic, but at the same time, you see the path, which is the most exciting part. It's the same thing with this basketball team, where you could finally see how all of these pieces could work together, and this could be the best basketball team in the Pac-12. The same thing is happening in this defense. Maybe not with the best odds. Maybe there aren't multiple paths, but you could see how, you know, Jason Harris is ready to go day one. Antonio Alfano gets his waiver. You get everybody in the second year in the system, and that actually does have the benefits you expect. Nate Landman's the guy we saw late the season, all season. These young cornerbacks do what they did, and Mekhi Blackmon and Chris Miller are right there with them. There is a way for that to happen, and that's really exciting. Mikhail's bought in as well. He really does think that they're going to take a big, big jump next year. As you guys may or may not know, taking care of your teeth is pretty important. Our friends at Green Mountain Dental Group are giving away a free Sonicare toothbrush when you schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam. That's right, you simply have to take care of your teeth for Green Mountain Dental Group to hand over a free Sonicare. Check them out today online, or you can call 303-988-0711 to schedule your appointment today. That was a really quick one. Well, let's jump into the final segment now. I think we have a comment. I was like going through the website quickly and thought I saw a little notification pop up. While this loads, and it always takes longer to load than you expect, I want to talk about these dumb XFL rules. Not sure if you guys have seen this, but my goodness, is it a mess? Just absurd. It's hardly even football. There's so many things where you're just like, what are you doing? You know, have you guys ever watched like Canadian football, like CFL stuff where they do the, like they only have three downs. There's constant passing. There's like all this weird stuff, the running toward the line of scrimmage before the snap. And like they make the challenge flags yellow and the penalty flags red, which had to be intentionally just backwards of every other league of football just to confuse everybody who watches. Like, it's kind of like nonsense changes like that one. You know, the other stuff they tried is like weird. This isn't really football. But the flag thing is like, huh, are you just intentionally making this strange? And that's what the XFL is also doing in a bunch of different ways. To be honest, I think it makes me want to watch the league a lot more just to see what it actually looks like. And I hate that because I want to say, no, you're ruining this sport. Stop. I don't even know where to start. Let's go with their PAT rules. So, you know how football works. We all know how football works. You can kick the extra point. Sometimes, like in the NFL, they back you up a little bit, which is weird. So you can kick it. You get 1 point. You can go for two from the two-yard line. You get 2 points. I guess it's not always two. Sometimes it's the three-yard line. But that is not the case in the XFL. You cannot kick an extra point. You have to go for the conversion.
but you get to pick where you start. So if you start at the 2-yard line, then you get 1 point. If you start at the 3-yard line, then you get 2 points. And if you start at the 10-yard line, then you can get 3 points. Strange. The kickoffs, again, with the thought of making this safer, were ruined. So basically what's going to happen is, this is hard to explain. The kicker is still going to line up at the same spot, kick the ball from his own 35, but the rest of his kicking team is going to be like 40 yards downfield. They're going to start at the returning, or I guess the other, I think it's the 30, maybe off the top of my head, and they're all just going to be lined up in a line at the 30, then 5 yards away at the 25, the whole return team is going to line up except for the returner. And then as soon as the returner catches the ball, then everybody can move. It's weird. Safer, but weird. Punts, touchbacks turned out to be at the 35. If, you know, like the ball goes in the end zone, you kick the ball out of bounds, they get it at the 35 as well. So you can't even like try to kick it out of bounds at the 2 or something. That goes to the 35. More returns. Also, is that one where somebody can't move or something at some point? I can't remember. There's double forward pass. You can throw the ball forward twice as long as it doesn't cross the line of scrimmage before the second pass. Overtime is like a shootout. 2-yard line, each team gets 5 tries, whoever gets the most wins. I don't know. I think it's dumb, but most of my takes are kind of like traditionalist-y. So maybe I'm weird. Also, I forgot to keep loading the comment. Oh, no, I didn't. Okay, still got the comment. From Jace Milkston, who's also on Twitter, and I don't know how to pronounce this still. But he said, "You're just feeding the trolls with this one. College basketball is college basketball. Every team went 1-1 this weekend, as you mentioned, and there were so many road upsets this weekend and throughout the year. A couple in a row, yes, panic. This hurt because of the circumstance, but it means so little in the overall scheme. Also, no, it wouldn't have been better to have lost to Oregon. Feather in the cap, and this won't be viewed as a bad loss. They will be top 100. Yep. Definitely better to beat Oregon, lose to Oregon State than the other way around. Show that ceiling. Show that high ceiling. Show that you can do it. Feeding the basketball trolls, I think that might be kind of fair. It definitely sucks. It definitely sucks. They blew an opportunity. I think that the expectations really grew after the stretch where you beat Dayton and Oregon. Thought that this was a team that, they're still Pac-12 title contenders for sure, but, you know, there's still some growing pains. They aren't where they need to be yet. And I thought that, at least I personally thought that after seeing what they did against Dayton, seeing what they did against Oregon, they'd turn that corner. They were just off and running at this point. They'd gotten everything clicking. Wasn't the case. There's still a bunch of road bumps to come, likely. Like you said, college basketball is college basketball. Yep. But I thought I thought they had that one. I really thought they had that one. Every team went 1-1 this weekend. Yeah. And I said that earlier in this show too. As Tad said, that's basically a win for the road teams, a loss for the home teams. Now, all these home teams, including Colorado, have to go on the road and win one more game than they normally would have had to. Definitely possible. But you gotta beat Arizona on the road now. Beat Oregon on the road. One of these teams that you probably weren't going to get, you got to get to balance all this out. If they lose a couple in a row, though, that's when you get concerned. That's when you start to say, wait, is this team really a contender? This was just rough timing more than anything. It would have been nice for them to turn that into a win streak. Get through that Oregon State game, get through Utah, be undefeated for a whatever 3-week stretch, 4-week stretch, whatever that would have been,
maybe five. That would have really shown that you're turning a corner. Losing this game, it starts to bring out the questions more than anything. You need to see long sustained success at some point. Right now, if they lose again, then all of a sudden, where even is this team? Are we way off? Having a hot start to conference play, being able to say, no, look at this. They really are this good. Sure, you're going to hit rough patches. You're going to lose a couple games on a weekend. But it would be so much more comfortable to be more confident in this team than I currently am. And I'm still really confident in this team. I still think they have... I'll say they have as good of odds as anybody to win the Pac-12 this year. I would have said they have the best odds if they beat Oregon State, though. Again, like you said, it's the circumstance. You had that opportunity to dominate the narrative, to win that game, go beat Utah, then go into, I think, is Arizona up next? I think that's the Arizona weekend. I don't know if it's Arizona or Arizona State first, but to go into that with some wind at your sails, with the momentum, with the narrative in the Pac-12 being, look at this. Look at this team. They're cleaning up. They're the favorite so far. They're doing everything that's asked of them. And so far, you know, they just aren't doing everything that's asked of them, which is too bad. No reason to panic yet by any means. And also, I mean, Utah's a sneaky good basketball team. They gave Oregon a run this weekend as well. Would have been really disappointing for Oregon to have dropped that game to Utah and kind of tarnish that Colorado win over Oregon. I agree. Like this will be one that you want back for sure. When you get to the end of the season, this is going to be one where you say, wow, think of how much differently things could have played out. You know, now they're building off of being number 25 in the country. That's a good place to be. I think before the season, if you had said Colorado is going to be ranked 25th today, I think I probably would have hoped for a little bit better for sure, but being totally realistic, not a bad outcome by any means. Maybe just below what you want. Maybe you want to be more in that 20 range, as like your average spot at this point. But again, top 25, 2 months left to keep building on top of this, to jump from 25 to 23 next week, to jump from, I guess if you beat the Arizona schools, you go from 23 to 15, 16, depending on how everything plays out, depending on how the games look. And then just keep building going forward. Sure would have been nice to be building off of being number 17 right now, being number 16 right now. That's just a bump that would have been really huge, and they didn't get it, obviously. So, again, it's about whether you can... college basketball, it's about the tournaments. And that's something that, I don't know, I never have been a fan of. I don't think there's a way to fix it necessarily, but to have this whole long season be decided by individual games, one game, then the next game, you just have to keep winning, and it's about whoever's hot then. It kind of devalues the regular season. And, you know, you could make the argument that football's that way too, but at the same time, you only play so many games there. And especially in college football, like, you have to win pretty much all of them to get in. I don't know. When you look at the NBA, the NHL having the series, the MLB having a series, so that it really is the better team that's moving on more often than not, takes a little bit of the drama out for sure. I mean, we've seen, you know, NBA. It's been LeBron versus the Warriors for how long? Shifting, but there'll be whatever powerhouses. The Lakers are probably going to come out of the West. The Bucks are probably going to come out of the East.
But then there you go, because the better team wins. And maybe that's too far. Maybe that takes the fun out of sports to some degree. But to play, whatever, 30 games and, you know, have one loss in the Pac-12 tournament mean, nope, you are not the champion, even if you wipe the floor with everybody during the season. You're clearly the best team. Or in the NCAA tournament, same thing can happen. Adds drama. That's what makes sports fun. But also, it'd be nice if the better teams had just a tiny bit more of an advantage, I guess. The point of what I'm trying to say is, though, that's what really matters for Colorado, is what do they look like at the end of the season? Just get hot in the Pac-12 tournament and you'll be just fine. You know, it'd be nice to have better matchups to make that path easier. I actually haven't looked at how the Pac-12 tournament's set up. Now that I think of it, I don't know what all the buy situations look like, if they're like double buys. I'll dig into that next, because I definitely should know that, and that just has not crossed my mind until right now. See what the format of that is. But yeah, you get hot, you can win. You just have to win whatever, 4 or 5 games. Same thing in the NCAA tournament. It'd be nice if you can pull a 3 seed and then you play the 14 seed right away. And then you play the 4 seed if you win. And then you play the 2 seed and then the 1 seed. And everything just lines up to make it pretty simple, pretty easy. I mean, maybe not easy, but give you the best shot. Instead of being the 8 who has to play the 9 and then play the 1 in round 2 and pretty much be guaranteed a loss there. You know, still, you can get hot. If you really are that good and you just had some rough patches that knocked you down to that 8 seed, then maybe you can take down Kansas or whoever else ends up being up there at the end of the season. Who even knows at this point? Better year than ever, honestly, to wind up with a 5 seed instead of a 3 seed, to wind up with a 7 seed instead of a 5 seed, whatever we're looking at here at this point. There's still so much time to shake out who the real contenders are. But, you know, it's not about beating Oregon State on Sunday in January, but it would have been nice if that team really thought that it was and would have just done it, because they'd be in a better spot right now. A little more national attention, more local attention, which is a point that I've hammered home a lot before. This weekend wasn't what matters. What matters is what happens at the end of the season. How much fun would it have been, though? How much fun? Yeah. You know, sky isn't falling. They're back to work. They're figuring out whatever they need to figure out. And we'll see how that goes this Sunday when they play Utah. Also, some women's basketball games. I'm not sure what the times. I almost think they might be playing Sunday in Boulder as well. I must be off on something here. That'd be weird, right? Maybe they do that in the Pac-12. I don't know. They have a couple fun games. I thought it was USC Friday, UCLA Sunday. With UCLA being ranked 8th and USC also being very good, but, I mean, not all that great in the Pac-12. If that actually is on Sunday, or no, maybe, no, the Buffs are on the road. I think I said that they were at home also. No, they're definitely home, because we were talking about tailgate. Let's see. Yeah, so Colorado's home against Utah at 4 on Sunday. Oh, and Colorado's women's team is home against UCLA at noon on Sunday. So I guess they just go back-to-back. That's going to be a great day. Let's see. I wonder if there's anything fun we could do. I'll be hanging out. They must kick everybody out, make them come back in. They don't probably sell, like, doubleheader tickets. But I'll be there for the women's game at noon. That'll get over, what, like, 2, get through media, be done with that by 3, and then have an hour before the game. I don't know. Maybe we can hang out or something before the game. If anybody's going, just let me know. I don't need to just sit there at my computer. Doubleheader's weird, though. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited. What a weird little ramble there at the end. But I think it's probably time to head out. Like I said earlier, Draft Pod tomorrow, we'll probably be doing a live show right around 11. And then Thursday, we'll have Buffs podcast, which is going to be a lot of fun. I'm not sure what we'll talk about yet because there really isn't anything going on between now and then. But I guess Friday we'll be previewing the games, and then we'll move along to see what happens this weekend. Also, tomorrow night, I want to plug it one more time. Wednesday night, 5:30 is the start of the watch party. If you can't get there till, I don't know, basketball games are like 2.5 hours. I think the game's at 6. So I'll be done at 8:30. If you guys want to swing by at like 7:45 and catch the last 45 minutes because you're busy, that works too. Point is, we're going to be at the Sports Column in downtown Denver watching the Nuggets play the Mavericks. Like I said, watch party at 5:30. The game starts at 6. It's going to be a lot of fun. Last I saw, I actually did get a message during this podcast is the word, that we're up like over 60 RSVPs for tomorrow, which is going to be a lot of fun. And it makes sense because honestly, our environment to watch Nuggets games is more fun than pretty much any other. The Pepsi Center has not been super lit for those, which has been kind of disappointing, but a lot of fun. If you RSVP, you can win Nuggets tickets. Your odds are still pretty good. I know that's a lot of people, but still pretty good. Also, you can win tickets for, or no, you can win shirts, DNVR swag, and also, no matter what, you get your first beer free if you RSVP. Breckenridge beers. So it's free beer. Come hang out. I don't know what else it would take to sell you. Sports Call on 5:30. Hopefully I see you there. Also leave comments because I like comments. That comment today was definitely super valuable. I think it was a good point. I think we were all a little bit low after that Oregon State loss, reasonably, myself included. And you know what? It's college basketball. You win some, you lose some. You'd like to be able to lose a game in February instead of losing it now, but that's not how things panned out. Now they got to win one more game down the stretch to do what they could have done. That's a weird way to think of all of this, but I'm leaving now. This has been like 3 minutes of me saying goodbye. So I'll be back Thursday with the Buffs Pod, tomorrow with the Draft Pod. See you then. I think they like my Colorado swag.
Pushing 180, speeding pad competition. See you later, baby. Colorado Army with soldiers like the Navy, yeah. And Boulder's where we stationed, patiently awaiting. When I hit the field, it's so hard to behave. I'm Colorado swagging as the crowd do the wave. Look into my eyes, I can tell that you afraid, cause you know we finna hit ya, hit ya, hit ya, hit ya. Hey, you on your own now, why you watching the official? You just better hope you make it to the next whistle. And we ain't playing with you, you can get it anytime. It started at the scrimmage, we gon' win it at the line. My Colorado swag in the middle of the ring. Knocking down team after team.
I think they like my Colorado swag. Cause when I'm in that play, I don't really know just how to act. And when I'm in that go, you know I'm acting bad. Holla, get a bus with my Colorado swag. My Colorado swag, my Colorado swag. I think they like my Colorado swag. My Colorado swag, my Colorado swag. Might not swear, I think they like my Colorado swag.
Have you ever seen a ram?
Lambo. Colorado.
Buffalo is what I am.
All the teams come and follow.
When I start, hit the field.
The opposing crowd swallow.
Cause they know I'm about to kill.
He gon' feel that tomorrow.
Whole team full of warriors.
Got me feeling tribal. Big 12, here we come. We ain't worried about a rival.
If you want it, come and get it. We'll wait for your arrival.
When you hit this Folsom Field, man, it's all about survival.
Why you make it, why you make it? Yeah, you better bring your Bible.
Great big blind side, flatline, no revival.
Get them bust, mess them up, we say we got them.
If we don't, then we'll get them. When we see them, then we
have
them.
Like my Colorado swag, cause when I'm in that play, I don't really know just how to act. And when I'm in that go, you know I'm acting bad. Holla, get them bust with my Colorado.
Colorado swag. My Colorado swag. My Colorado swag. I think they like my Colorado swag. My Colorado swag. My Colorado swag. Man, I swear, I think they like my Colorado swag. I think they like my Colorado swag. Cause when I'm in it black, I don't really know just how to act. And when I'm in it gold, you know I'm acting bad. Holla, get a bus with my Colorado swag. My Colorado swag. My Colorado swag. I think they like my Colorado swag. My Colorado swag. My Colorado swag. Man, I swear, I think they like my Colorado swag.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.